center, and coming in is Loom. Hewitt-Dyke centered it.
Flame bench, there's all kinds of excitement going on there.
Scores! Roll the highlight reel. 6-0 Flames.
You can't put it in the win column.
Yeah, baby, yeah, baby, yeah, baby.
This is Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, let's get things going this hour. It is Thursday, April 4th, and we are underway on Flames Talk this hour on Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcast with Wes Gilbertson of Post Media. My name is Pat Steinberg. Hello, Wes. How are we doing?
I'm good, buddy. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I haven't made one glaring mistake or anything in my day-to-day life so far on this Thursday, so we're better than the rest of the week.
It's been a grind, hey?
Yeah, it's been a week. Welcome to the Sports Drive. Brought to you by Calgary Lock & Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to CalgaryLockAndSafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution. Let's kick off this hour talking a little bit about Connor Zary. Later on this hour, we'll go inside hockey with Kevin Woodley, our goaltending guru. Talk a little Markstrom, Demko, Oilers goaltending, and more before the top of the hour. But first time in Connor Zary's NHL career, where I think you could make the argument that he's fighting it, and you could make the argument that he's struggling. And he's had nights where he's been off, like any player does, but he's now played 5 games since returning from an 8-game absence. He has 1 point in those 5 games and just has not been the same Connor Zary that, you know, the dynamic, the creative, the kind of at times straw that stirs the drink offensively for the Flames like he has been for so much of his rookie season. Am I, first of all, before we dive too much into it, am I off on that? Like, have you seen the same thing since he's been back?
Yeah, and I think you picked the exact, the right word, the best word, when you say he hasn't been as dynamic as we're accustomed to seeing. I think that's absolutely fair. He's a guy who just hasn't had the impact in these past 5 games that we'd grown used to seeing from Connor Zary. And, you know, before we get further into the struggles of a 22-year-old, we'll stress that, you know, we're not beating up on him. His rookie season has still been a pleasant surprise for these Calgary Flames, all these things. It's just in the past few games, hasn't looked like the guy that we saw for so much of November through mid-March.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I'm curious as to the reasons why. We don't know the reasons why. I have my theories. We talked a little bit about it on Wednesday's roundtable. I think missing all that time and then jumping back into NHL action at this stage of the year where the pace is so much higher, and then, like, you're cold. It's tough enough going cold and jumping back in, but now you're cold and jumping back into playoff chase intensity and playoff chase pace. And I think that's even more difficult for a player who's never done it before. That to me is kind of my theory on what we're seeing right now.
Yeah, for sure. We're talking about a guy who'd never missed a sizable chunk of time at this level. I think he missed 1 game earlier this year due to injury, had something that was nagging him a little bit. I want to say there was a game in Nashville that he didn't play, but you know, this is the first time that he's missed any sort of multiple game stretch at the NHL level. And so I think that's a fair assessment for sure. You know, I wonder what the injury sort of took out of him, for lack of a better term, because we heard Ryan Huska say, and I know we've both shared this as one of our observations as well, that the pace hasn't quite been the same. You know, the speed that he uses to attack the middle, the sort of swagger and confidence that he has shown when carrying the puck, it hasn't quite been the same since he came back from injury. And I think that's probably to be expected. And yet, based on what we've seen all season out of Connor Zary, when you see him have less of an impact than he had been, it's fair to wonder, okay, what's going on here? Is this, like you said, is this the game speeding up? Is this a guy slowing down because of the lingering impacts of injury, because of the layoff? because of the potential fatigue of the number of games he's played, yeah. right? Like this is the end of what's been an eye-opening season for Connor Zary, and that's a potential factor in it too.
Yeah. This is assistant coach Cale McLean from Thursday's pregame show, the coach's show. And so this is part of his conversation with Derek Wills, which we always talk to either head coach Ryan Husko or a member of the coaching staff for our Flames warm-up pregame shows. And this was Cale McLean when Derek asked him about Connor Zary and about what he's seen from Connor since returning from injury.
I see a young player that's in the second half of his first NHL season. Who's, you know, as you say, he found himself injured and then coming back from that hasn't quite found his game. But I also see a young guy that's dealing with a NHL in March and April that the pace picks up, the intensity picks up. Playoff races are all around and it's harder to execute at this time of year. So I think it's something where Connor's it's always a growth experience for a young guy like that, and this is no exception. He still has the same poise that we've seen. He's got good awareness away from the puck. He's got the ability to play defensively in structure, and it's just about learning how to find that consistency, which, put in another way, is learning how to be able to perform under really heavy pressure and in fast games at this time of year. Because you can say consistency, well, it's about being able to get the job done when things get ramped up. And that's something that everyone's going to find challenging at times in their young career.
So that's Cale McLean.
That's a good answer.
It really is. I think it gives you a little bit more insight. Mike in Blackfalds texts in, says, opposition playing at a higher level is grinding on Zary's game. Bad time to get injury time off. And I really, I think there's something to that from Mike's text as well. And the timing of the injury, if this was October, November, I think it's different than him missing time in March, right? And I think that the difference in timing and him being a rookie, I think really plays into it. Not even to excuse anything. I just think I think it would have been hard enough had he not been injured to continue to adjust to the ever-increasing intensity level and pace level that the NHL goes through as a year rolls on. And now you've got to do it after missing 2-3 weeks with an upper body injury and jump back in cold. I really think that's a difficult thing to do.
You know what I was thinking, buddy, when we were texting back and forth about what we'd discuss, and you mentioned, we didn't get to the Connor Zary debate yesterday. Let's dig in on that a little. I was driving down to the studio, and what I couldn't stop thinking is that Connor Zary has, and this is such a credit to his first 50 some games at the NHL level, Connor Zary has changed the expectations that all of us have for him.
Oh, 100%.
With the impact he's made, right? The way Connor Zary has played in these past 5 games and the, I suppose, struggle to be a difference maker that we've seen, I think that's probably what I expected to see out of Connor Zary in his first year as a rookie. I expected to end nights and say, oh yeah, Zary made that great play where, he sort of runs Trevor Zegras into the linesman and he goes on that break down the ice, and that's a flash of what we might see in the future, right? And even if that was the only kind of flash that you saw on Tuesday against the Anaheim Ducks, you'd, at the end of the night, you'd say, geez, yeah, I see the potential in this rookie forward. I see the potential in this previous first round pick. And yet, because he made such a splash, because his introduction was so strong, when we only see brief little flashes, now we're sitting here talking about, well, what's gone on, and why isn't it the normal Connor Zary? And I just want to point out what a credit that is to what he's done so far, right? Like, he's changed the expectations that we in media, that fans, that opponents around the league have in terms of what he's capable of.
100%.
And good on him for that.
One of the, and this conversation notwithstanding, he's been one of the top 2 or 3 positive stories for the Flames this year. And definitely maybe the what's a more, outside of the trades and all of that, what's a more positive or surprising story for the Flames this year than Connor Zary? No, I mean, Pospisil would be right there with them.
Right.
But I mean, the emergence of those two starting within one game of one another was November 1st and November 3rd, I think. Those two becoming what they are have got to be the number one or number two or close to it surprises of the season.
Yeah, I mean, when you talk about sort of feel-good stories for the Calgary Flames, the only other one I'd put in the mix would be, and it's a very different topic, but the return of Oliver Shillington. But when you look at those two guys you mentioned in Pospisil and Zary, and the way that they have not only been able to establish themselves as NHLers, but establish themselves as key forwards. Like when Pospisil and Zary aren't in the lineup, you notice. When Zary is not at his best, you notice.
100%.
And that is just proof of how quickly those have gone from on the radar, in Zary's case, maybe even off the radar, in Pospisil's case, prospects, to really important pieces for this Flames team.
Yeah. I also do a couple of other questions about where or why this is happening. Number one, I do wonder, like, is he still playing through something? And I honestly don't know. It's not me throwing it out there as a wink, wink, nudge, nudge. I honestly don't know if he's still playing through something.
Yeah.
That'd be one. Number two, you know, outside of the pace and all that stuff that we talked about and as we heard in Cale McLean's answer, I also just wonder if, as you said, the NHL grind, the grind of an NHL schedule, the fact that it is every second day, almost all the time. And that's not, you go through some of those stretches in the American League, and then you go through four straight weeks where you only play on weekends. And in the NHL, that doesn't happen. It is every second day. And then maybe you get a 2-day break between games. And then maybe rarely you get that weird break they got a couple of weeks ago. But it is an absolute meat grinder of a schedule. I don't know how these, I don't know us, and this is not, no disrespect to any other sport, but the physicality and all of what goes into playing one NHL 60-minute game, to do that 82 times over the amount of time they do it, like, I know baseball's a grind with 162, and I know the NBA plays 82, and I know that football is its own animal, but I honestly don't know if there is a larger kind of combined mental physical grind than an NHL hockey season. It is bonkers what these people put themselves through to go through a season.
Yeah, I agree with that. And you kind of hear about those rigors when guys look back at it, right? Like you would have played it on the post-game show. We discussed it Monday on Flames Talk. Rasmus Anderson's comments the other night about what it's like to be a new guy in the National Hockey League, that was one of the things that he said after Saturday's victory over the Los Angeles Kings, is that you just don't realize how much hockey it is. You can't really wrap your head around what the NHL kind of means until you get there and you're in it.
You mean this clip right here?
I know it's only 10 games, but it feels just a lot busier. You know, I think you're always on the go. You're always practicing. You have an event. You're always traveling. So I think it's just making sure you're taking adequate time to feel good and rest your body, do those recovery things. I think that's the biggest difference. You don't really have 3-4-day stretches in between back-to-back games. So it's nice. I think you play every second game or every second day, and it's good because if you have a tough one, you know, you got another game coming right away and you can prove yourself again. So I think those are little things that you're trying to take positives out of having a busy schedule.
So that's not the right clip. That's Connor Zary talking about, not Rasmus Anderson.
Yeah, but that's enlightening in itself, right? Is that something that...
That was from Monday after practice, by the way.
Right. And so when you hear a young guy in the league talk about it, he's learning it on the fly. And I think what reinforces it and why I mentioned Rasmus Anderson is that years later, when you ask an established, proven, everyday NHLer what they sort of learned in that first year, that's it above everything else. It's not there's the old cliche, you know, everyone's stronger, everyone's faster, everyone's better, but it's really the grind of the schedule that you hear the most about.
Yep.
And I think we're seeing some of that with Connor's era. I also do think we're seeing, and I don't know if it's lingering injury or just lingering effects of the layoff, but I think we're talking about a guy who hasn't got back up to the speed he needed to be at before the injury. And the current, I guess, state of the playoff races and everything else require it to get nudged even past that point.
Yep. Yeah. So then last question I'll ask, should we put, because you and I have been two of the people that have talked about this, we'd really like to see Connor Zary at center. Should we maybe shelve that conversation for the time being? Just be as he's struggling right now, you know, maybe in the next 3-4 games, he gets his game back and it's a completely different conversation. You know, maybe, and I have no idea if he is where he's going to play in the lineup against Winnipeg on Thursday. I don't know who he's going to be playing with. I don't know what the lineup situation is going to look like. There's lots of questions. We don't know if Mangiapane's going to play. We don't know where Zary's going to play. We don't know what the lines are going to look like. But do we wait? Do we wait until he's back looking a little bit more like the old Connor Zary before going back to having the conversation about putting him at center, which puts even more responsibility on him?
Yeah, I mean, Pat, with 7 games to go after tonight, I'm hesitant to cross anything off our list of things that we could talk about on Flames
fair.
Talk.
That's very fair.
But yeah, I do think it is time to shelve that discussion for now. And I guess for 2 reasons. And I had a conversation with Ryan Huska coming out of the All-Star break, actually. I wasn't going to be with the team in Boston, and so I asked to have a quick chat with him over the phone. Obviously, so much had changed with Elias Lindholm being traded, and so when I connected, I just asked, well, who, you know, what are we going to see? Everyone wants to know if you're going to move one of the young guys to center, and we know now that the plan was to move Yegor Sharangovich there, but nobody knew that at the time, and Ryan Huska didn't divulge exactly what the lineup would look like, but he talked about, you know, you have to be careful about putting young guys and specifically rookies in a position where they're going to have success, because it's really important for their development. It's really important for their confidence moving forward that if you're going to throw them in a position like, in that case, top line center, you have to know or be reasonably optimistic that it's going to go well, or you can do more harm than good.
Mm-hmm.
You have to make sure you're putting those guys in an opportunity or a position where you feel like they're going to have success. And right now, I don't think that putting Connor Zary at center puts him in a position to succeed. Because what we've seen, and I know there's been one or two texts come in and say, you know, guys, look at the impact Kadri and Pospisil have on their line mates. Kuzmenko is the latest proof of that. And while I certainly don't think that Zary was just a product of who he was playing with, I think you want to see him do more to drive a line from his wing before you'd consider bumping him over to center. And right now, these past 5 games, Connor Zary isn't one of the guys driving his line. And until he gets back to that point, whether that's the sort of number one driver like Nazem Kadri has been on his line, whether that's a sort of complementary driver like Zary certainly was on that Kadri and the kids line, I think you need him to get back to having that sort of impact before you put him at center. Otherwise, I just think you send a guy into the offseason thinking, man, I had 12 or 13 really tough games in a row to end it. And that's not good for his confidence. And
yep.
Quite frankly, going into the summer, that's the most important thing with Connor Zary, is that he looks back and says, okay, I established myself. I showed what I can do at this level. Here's what I need to work on to make sure I do it again.
And maybe to take a step.
Of course, to take a step, yeah.
And on Monday, Connor Zary was also asked about playing center and if that's something they've talked about, if that's something that could be in the future, if that's something he wants to tackle.
I haven't talked too much about it. I think it's just doing what I can day to day, and wherever I'm put, I try and do my best to excel at it. So I think no matter where I'm playing wing center, I think I'll just do whatever I can to to kind of show myself and do what I can do, and happy on the wing right now, and if I'm at center, I'll be happy too, so it doesn't really matter too much to me.
Is playing at center in the NHL something you actually want to do?
I think it depends, right? I think it's a lot different of a position, and I haven't really played it at all at the NHL level really yet, so I think it's definitely something to see, and it's definitely something I'm comfortable with and like playing, but I also have found a nice home on the left side, and I like playing there as well. So to me, it's all about just feeling good with where you're at and what you're playing and doing what's ever needed.
So I think he'd be happy to tackle the challenge, but maybe now isn't the right time. Maybe now isn't the proper time to go down that road. Because, you know, if we weren't having the first part of this conversation about him struggling a little bit, I think I'd feel differently. And I would like to see Connor Zeri try it out at center at some point. But maybe I need to dial back on the urgency of when, because I think you want him to be playing a much higher brand or higher level of hockey before you go down that road, I think.
Yeah, and Connor Zeri has proven to be a pretty quick learner. I remember, earlier this season, he'd had a couple down games, and Ryan Huska had a chat with him and later shared it with the media. You know, we had a one-on-one about here's what you haven't been doing as much in these last couple, and he got back to it pretty quickly. And, you know, Connor Zeri's sharp enough to know that there's suddenly a lot of focus in this city on his play and where he should be in the lineup and why he was briefly relegated to fourth line during Tuesday's dud against the Ducks and up and down the list. And so you might see a real inspired performance in these next couple of games. You might see him go out and deliver two really strong performances against the Jets and the Edmonton Oilers. And then as you hit the road to California, I would consider putting him at center. But right now, as he works to find his game on the wing, I just don't think asking him to take on more responsibility, asking him to play a position he hasn't played full-time in a couple of seasons, I just don't think you're putting him in a position to have success.
Yep. Not going to really get any argument from me. And that's coming from a guy who is very adamant that he should play center at some point.
We could be having this conversation again in 4 or 5 days, but I think we're on the same page that until we see the usual Connor Zeri, let's just give him a bit of time to find his game before we ask him to add something to it.
A couple of texts, 960-960 on Zeri. Guys, it's a total mental thing. Pelche the same way when he came back, just not the same. Self-confidence in the injury, learning curve of a pro coming back from injury. This reads, Pat, it's all about line mates. Kadri and Pospisil made Zeri look good. Look at Kuzmenko. And I'm with you, Wes. I think it's more than just those two things. But I do think
the chemistry didn't hurt. But
absolutely not.
But Connor Zeri was a big part of what was keeping that line clipping along.
And Bill from Calgary says, I never would have dreamed that Zeri and Pospisil would be top six forwards, never mind impact players. And, you know, whether Pospisil's a top six or a top nine, and where he's an impact player.
Yeah.
Michael Backlund said it Thursday morning, their record with him compared to without him, significant. He makes an impact on this team.
Are you not going to read this text from Tall Guy 23?
No. Basketball fan 972-673-4721. We'll just skip that text. I wasn't making the point that they're better athletes. I was just saying the grind of an NHL season, block shots, body checks, all of what goes into it, and the 82 games and the mental grind. I just think it's the hardest one to do in pro sports when you combine everything.
And
that's not taking a shot at any other sport. They're all difficult. They all tax you.
Jeez. You might need some load management.
Might be onto something there. It's Pat and Wes along with you. We're coming at you this hour from our Doug Lacey's Basement Systems downtown studio. Do you have cracks in your walls, floors, or ceilings? Visit dlbasementsystems.com for a free estimate. They're all things basement-y.
Flamestock is on the air and streaming on the Sportsnet mobile app. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
Go inside hockey on this Thursday for Calgary Co-op. It's that time to stock up for the celebrations that matter with ingredients that help make memories. Visit Calgary Co-op, where life's in store. With Wes Gilbertson, it's Pat Steinberg along with you. And now our regular Thursday chat with Kevin Woodley of In Goal Magazine and NHL.com. We talk all things goaltending with Kevin once a week here on Flame Stuff. Mr. Woodley, good to hear from you as always. How are we doing?
We're good. We're getting down the stretch here and keeping a close eye on the top of that Pacific Division here in the West, because I don't think after that beating that the Vegas Golden Knights gave the Canucks, anybody wants anything to do with them in the first round out here in Vancouver.
Yeah, and they got a little help from the Dallas Stars on top of that Pacific Division on Wednesday night as well, helping keep Edmonton at bay, hey?
Yeah, and I don't think anybody's going to want anything to do with Dallas now that Jake Oettinger's found his game either.
Yeah, which is something that we absolutely can touch on here as we dive in. I guess before we go too far into some league-wide things, I did want to ask you just one on Jacob Markstrom, and I'll give you the genesis as to why I asked this. You know, now that the trade deadline has passed, and we're a little less than a month removed from the deadline, and now that we know that Chris Tanev, Noah Hanifin, Elias Lindholm no longer with this team, it's been a lot of talk by Flames fans of, man, they should have traded Jacob at the deadline, because now his numbers are dropping, and, you know, his save percentage is here, it was there, and he's getting exposed and all that type of stuff. I just wanted to ask you, the goalie expert, like, do you think that it should affect his trade value, that some of those more traditional numbers have dropped a little bit? And if the Flames do end up going the direction of moving Markstrom this summer, do you think his trade value should be lower than maybe it would have been at the deadline?
Yeah, I mean, I guess you have the two things happen in the summer. One, you have the free agent market, right? But it's not a deep one. So in terms of, like, I think we've established who Jacob is. Does the numbers coming down and the proprietary numbers have dropped too? Does that, you know, probably to the point where any chance of being nominated for the Vezina Trophy, not that he was going to win it at this point, but even maybe being a finalist, probably gone out the window. Certainly having that on your resume might have increased your ask, or at least the outside perception or of the season you just had. But I think general managers know what they're getting in Jacob Markstrom. Now, the one question, if you want to dig into the numbers a little bit, as they have come down, and because the Flames have, like, it's not absolute, it's not consistent, but over the last couple of months, like, they've shown signs of being a better team defensively than they were for long stretches this season. And for the long stretches where Jacob Markstrom built all that sort of Vezina stock and credit and all those goals saved above expected, like, he was at his best when they were at their worst defensively. And that remains a question that I know some teams asked. As good as this guy is, are we getting the best out of him bringing him into a good defensive environment? Or is he at his best when he's, you know, for all the reasons I had him as a good fit in New Jersey, being asked to stop bullets in his teeth, you know, a bottom third defensive team. And there have been times where the shot count hasn't been busy and he hasn't been at his best recently. I think most people from the outside are just going to look at the situation and understand that maybe the focus and the performance dips with that. But if it's a question, and it is, I know it was a question that some teams were asking when they looked at him heading into this deadline, it certainly doesn't do anything to eliminate that question for those teams.
Okay. Yeah, it's going to be really interesting on the Markstrom front, how things go here. I mean, there's a lot of talk, Kevin, about, you know, the benefit potentially if they don't move him, of him and Dustin Wolf as a tandem, and the type of things that could rub off on Dustin, who looks like he'll start in Winnipeg on Thursday night, or if they do go down the road of moving him, whether it's New Jersey or elsewhere. It's going to be a really interesting goaltending conversation going into the offseason. And I guess, I mean, even league-wide, I don't know if there will be a bigger goaltending story than Markstrom, unless a team really has a goaltending disaster in the postseason. Feels like Jacob Markstrom is the biggest goalie story going into the summer period, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, every year it's the, you know, game of musical chairs that happens in goal. And that's what, even though there aren't huge names on the UFA list this summer, there are a lot of names. And so that sort of annual migration of teams bouncing around the league, that creates a lot of headlines. But I think you bring up a great point. all it takes is a contender with questionable goaltending to stub their toe and not get as far as management wanted, and you could end up with even more teams in the mix for Jacob Markstrom, because you can't get on the UFA market what he brings. And I would argue if there was anything headed to UFA market at, you know, sort of his pedigree, they'd be asking for more than the $6 million he's owed for the next couple of years. So in that case, you know, he's also becoming somewhat of a relative bargain. And again, I don't know that you need that, you know, the accolades he was trending towards before the trade deadline. I don't know that you necessarily need those to pan out to convince teams that he's still a really good goaltending option.
Kevin, something you just said has me curious, and I don't ask this in terms of potential market for Jacob Markstrom, but you say, you know, a contender with questionable goaltending. As the Stanley Cup playoffs approach, what is there one contending team that should be maybe most nervous about having their championship hopes dashed by what's happening between the pipes?
Yeah, it's a tough one. Because you just never, we've never seen this level of volatility in the position, even within a season, right? And that's the other reason, like, you know, Jacob Markstrom going through a slump to end the season, you know, given everything that's gone on there, like, well, the guy who's probably going to win the Vezina Trophy, by the way, is going through a slump right now as well in Connor Hellebuyck.
Yeah.
Like, the ability to sort of maintain that high level from start to finish of a season is becoming increasingly rare. We talked about Ottinger and the struggles he had. Now the heater he's on. Shesterkin has gone through stretches this season where, you know, he just hasn't looked like Igor Shesterkin. Sorokin's going through it right now. Stuart Skinner. And I think there's within that group, there are a handful of names that I think it's not so much, you know, maybe teams are like waiting for the shoe to drop, but until you've done it, you haven't done it. Igor Shesterkin, who had that historic season a couple of years ago, you know, essentially got outplayed by Akira Schmid in the series against New Jersey last year, right? So are there questions in that market being asked about goaltending? If a team that right now is in the hunt for the President's Trophy were to fall short, I guess there would be. Does that mean they're going to make a change based on it? No, but there are a lot of sort of questions around some of the goaltenders that head in, just because until you've done it, you haven't done it. And the names that have done it are not names we'd expect in the last couple of years, the Darcy Kempers and the Aiden Hills. Andre Vasilevskiy, who has done it, he's having a down season. So I think Shesterkin would be high on that list. But the fact that Jonathan Quick has been so good this season means you can go to him if you need him. And so the other guy that would be on that list that, you know, again, I don't think the team's waiting for the shoe to drop, but because he hasn't done it before and because his first playoff didn't go as well as anybody would have liked, and because they don't have a Jonathan Quick ready to go behind him, would be Stuart Skinner in Edmonton. And just given the Stanley Cup aspirations of that team and the fact that they don't really have a ton of proven options behind him, it feels like there's a lot riding on this postseason for him. And that's probably not fair because it's only his second year in the NHL. So to heap Stanley Cup hopes so heavily on the shoulders of such a young, inexperienced goaltender feels like a really big ask. And yet that's the one that I think a lot of people point to when they ask questions like that.
It's funny you bring up Stuart Skinner. You know, the Oilers sound like they're going to flip-flop their goalies and go Pickard, who played against Dallas, and Stuart Skinner the rest of the way, kind of just alternate them in an attempt to make sure that Skinner has the work but also has a decent rest level going into the playoffs. How should Oilers fans be feeling about Stuart Skinner as he's going to be the guy as they try to go on a deep run here?
I think they should feel pretty good. I mean, since the coaching change and since they stopped bleeding up high danger rush chances at the, you know, the highest level in the NHL, you know, his underlying profile is really good. He's you know, I think eighth in the NHL in adjusted save percentage, just not that far below Connor Hellebuyck, tied right now as the season has gone the other way in Calgary with Jacob Markstrom on a sort of per shot basis again since mid November, because you got to sort of erase the start to the season. And so within that, you don't ignore the start of the season. And so what changed from the beginning when the Oilers couldn't get a win and everyone said they couldn't get a save and there were all these questions about their goaltending till now. And that's rush chances. The worst in the National Hockey League, dead last, 32nd in high-danger chances against off the rush before the coaching change. And I gave it about a one-week buffer because it took a little while for the new coach to sort of get his changes implemented and get them on board. But since then, they've been the best, gone from dead last to number one in high-danger chances allowed off the rush. And lo and behold, Stuart Skinner is no longer a question in goal. And so the question becomes, if the Oilers maintain the way they're playing now, and they've been a really good defensive team for a couple of years, I think that gets overlooked. It reminds me of when the Leafs kept getting questions asked because they had so much talent up front, and people would be like, but can you win playing that way? I'm like, what are you talking about? They're defending great. The Oilers have kind of been that team now for the last couple of years. If they can maintain that in the playoffs, there's no reason to believe Stuart Skinner can't handle it. But if they start bleeding rush chance, I think we saw it the other night on the winning goal against St. Louis, right? Like rush chance, cross ice, across the slot line, one-timer. You are playing away from his strengths and arguably to his biggest relative weakness. Because even since the change, when the rush chances do happen, that's where his numbers are the worst, well below expected. When you start giving up rush chances, struggles at times a little bit with decision-making and reads off the rush, can leave himself too aggressive on the initial shooter if that pass gets through. And then just the movement and sort of the commitment across, it's not always clean. And there's times he ends up kind of stabbing at pucks rather than sliding across and keeping his hands active. So, you know, every goalie has relative weaknesses. This isn't picking on Stuart Skinner. But through the start of the season, even since the changes have made, this is one of the ones that jumps out. And so if you avoid that, no problem. If you all of a sudden start trading chances, and I don't know why they would, but if you do, then you're probably going to end up with the same questions being asked at the end of these playoffs as you did last year.
We are chatting with Kevin Woodley, In Goal Magazine, NHL.com. He joins us Thursdays on Flames Talk, talk goaltending around the league. It's Pat and Wes on this Thursday.
Kevin, the Flames see Connor Hellebuyck tonight in Winnipeg. You mentioned earlier that he's the considered the front runner for the Vezina. What struck you most about Hellebuck's season so far?
Well, up until the last 2 or 3 weeks, the consistency of it. You know, he was the guy I was pointing to, and maybe I jinxed him. I don't know. I don't believe in those things, but as one of the only guys that hadn't had a dip, right? Like, but for the last, I guess, months, little more than a month now, he's playing right at expected, like right around where you expect an average NHL goalie to be. And that's a pretty long period for him to not be where he has been all season near the top of the league. So it's been, up until this point, the consistency. The other part is how good he's been, again, up until this point, but how good he's been when games are tight. You know, we talked before about how Jacob Markstrom had passed him in goals saved above expected, you know, sort of on a cumulative basis was having a statistically better season when you talk about potential Vezina Trophy candidates. And he's still slightly ahead of him. And Jordan Binnington is ahead of him as well. Actually, Jordan Binnington's built up a full, like, 7-goal lead on Connor Hellebuyck at this point. Enough that you might sort of start to raise your eyebrow and ask questions about this Vezina Trophy if it continues for another 2 weeks and the Blues were to get it in the playoffs. But most of what Hellebuyck has done is in tie games. Like, if he's got, I think he's at 21 goals saved above expected right now. And the last time I checked, like, almost 20 of them were in tie games or with the Winnipeg Jets up a goal.
Wow.
So the fact it never wavers, the fact it's so consistent regardless of the situation, to me, that's, you know, when you dig past the sort of the raw, I guess it's not raw stuff, but the sort of the surface stuff of goals saved above expected, there are a lot of sort of layers beneath that that show you just how reliable and consistent and how much of a rock he has been for the Winnipeg Jets. Again, up into the last 4 weeks, which, I, to be honest with you, I can't fully explain, they're so uncharacteristic.
Last one we want to touch on with you, Kevin, and that is in your market and Thatcher Demko. It sounds like moving in a good direction. He's back on the ice, and so as the Canucks, who are clinched for the postseason for the first time in a number of years, sounds like they might have a fresh Thatcher Demko come playoff time.
I think that's the hope, and I think that's sort of been what they've been saying quietly behind the scenes ever since this injury occurred. Like, I don't think there was ever a fear. It's kind of the opposite of Elias Lindholm, where it's radio silence and not a lot of talk about his status and whether we'll see him or at all before the playoffs and questions like that, even though he's also on the road trip and is skating, which I think a lot of people speculating that it's a hand or a wrist issue of some sort. This was always the plan, and there was this sense that this could be a good thing. Too much time off might be a problem, but a month isn't bad. And if, as long as he's comfortable physically and trusts his body and the demands he puts on it, the lower body and the movements, and you watch Thatcher Demko move around the crease, and there was an element to this in Markstrom's game that's actually, when he arrived in Calgary, that's quiet a little bit, but the explosiveness is almost to the point of violence. And you know how much stress is being put on the lower body with every hard explosive push and stop, like the how much torsion is being put on the joint. So that requires absolute faith in that everything's going to hold together. So long as he's got that, what a great way to rest a guy who people were starting to question the workload for. Freddie Anderson, I think, is a prime example. We saw him out way longer because of the blood clots. So impressive since coming back. And now he's like, yeah, I don't think he's lost. He's got like a 955, and he looks just absolutely dialed in, and I would assume refreshed mentally for the Stanley Cup playoffs. And I think the hope here is that they get that out of Thatcher Demko coming back. Because for all the talk about workload around the league, when I talk to goalies, it's not necessarily just the physical demands. It's that the game's never been harder mentally. The amount of focus and concentration, the inability to get away with a B game anymore, those are the nights you give up five. Like, just the need to be so dialed and so on all the time, it wears these guys out between the ears as much as it does between the pipes. So, in theory, this could end up being a good thing for the Vancouver Canucks. I expect to see him. There was a report today, not this weekend. I think the earliest he's eligible to come back is Saturday against LA. We won't see him then. I don't think we'll see him on Monday against Vegas. But that still leaves three games left. And as long as he gets two of those, I think I told you guys, I compare that to a preseason. That's what most starting goaltenders get. They do the work with their goalie coach. They get two, maybe three starts before the season starts. And again, what bode well for the Vancouver Canucks, for the start of the season after his two or three exhibition game starts, Thatcher Demko was hands down the best goalie in the NHL for the first 6 weeks of the season. That's where most of his Vezina Trophy case was built, and that's what they're hoping they get back.
A pleasure as always, Kevin. Really always enjoy talking goalies with you around the league, and excited to do it as we move closer and closer to the 2024 Stanley Cup playoffs. Thank you as always for the time, man. We'll talk to you next week, hey?
Thanks, guys.
That's Kevin Woodley of In Goal Magazine and NHL.com joining us inside hockey for Calgary Co-op. Flames fans, meet Calgary, top products curated for Calgarians, and we mean every single one of you, only available at Calgary Co-op. Visit them today. Lots there on Thatcher Demko, Stuart Skinner, Connor Hellebuck, and of course, a little on Jacob Markstrom as well.
Great insights, always. Yeah, always.
You always learn something. I just love the Thatcher Demko, so explosive, bordering on violence. I'll never not be able to watch that again when I watch Demko play.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it, isn't it?
Oh, outstanding. Wes Gilbertson on Twitter at Wes Gilbertson. Thanks to Cam and Azam and Simon for helping us this hour as we wrap things up on the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to CalgaryLockandSafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution.